Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
I'm back. Day two of Elton Jim Toronto here filling in for Nick DiGilio. WGN Radio here. As I coined the show name, thanks to a loyal listener, Eric the Undertaker, the Wee Wee Hours show. And there's a pun in there. You can either get it or you don't. Just throwing it out there. The Wee Wee Hours at 2 in the morning. There's a joke there. You can peel the layers back and maybe you'll find it out. If not, no biggie. That's what I say. Good morning. And it is about almost 2:15 here. I'll be here till 5 o'clock this morning. We've got a great little show planned for you today. Hopefully, you will be able to start your day the Elton Jim way, if you will. Once again, I'm looking out into the Michigan Avenue from the Showcase Studio. I like to do I'd like to do things from the Showcase. I know Nick usually does it from the upstairs studio, but I like to be downstairs. And take a look at beautiful Michigan Avenue, Bull Mish, if you will. And you know, once again, it's such a interesting thing. I've worked here at all different times, and you know, for 5 years used to work here in the afternoon every day, and would just see so many different things coming. You know, as people would continue, could always tell when it was 5 o'clock every afternoon because suddenly the street, especially this area right here, got really congested. If I never looked at the clock, I knew when it was 5 o'clock or close to it, because all of a sudden there was a lot more foot traffic. I remember one time, about 3 or 4 years ago, if you remember, in February, we had a major 12 or 14-inch snowstorm, and it started literally at 3 o'clock. And so we sat here from 3 to 7, and we saw that storm just develop, which started with little snowflakes. They became heavier. It became windier. You could start to see the snow accumulating on the ground. You suddenly saw the traffic slowing down. Suddenly, you saw people from the Tribune Tower with snowblowers. And it was, and all of a sudden, you saw people bundled up, and you saw people leaving early. And it all took place right in front of us here with the windows right on Michigan Avenue. It was really a cool sight to see. Of course, then I had to leave and go home and go out into that storm. But to see the genesis of it was really kind of a neat experience. I always remember that sitting in the studio. Phone number is 312-981-7200. Today we will be talking little Beatles with you this weekend, as I said to Patty, in Rosemont at the Regency Hyatt O'Hare, is the Fest for Beatle Fans. Used to be called Beatle Fest for many, many years. And then I think the Beatle folks got in touch with the organizers and said, can you change the name for legal reasons? Beatles is kind of our trademark. I don't know why. I mean, they still have Beatles in their title. But so now it's officially called the Fest for Beatle Fans, and it has been here in Chicago for decades. One of Chicago's number one Beatle fans, Aunt Terry Hemmert from WXRT, is the MC for the event and has been for many, many years. And today we'll be having a regular with Nick to talk Beatles, Robert Rodriguez. I'm sorry. And so he'll be in about 10 or 15 minutes, and we will have a nice little discussion about not only what is coming up at Beatle Fest this weekend on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, but we'll also talk about the Beatles. It's an amazing story how in the last 15 years or so, there's been an amazing renaissance for the Beatles. You say, what are you talking about, Jim? They're the Beatles. Yeah, I know, but you know what? I got news for you. In the 80s, not much talk about or buzz about the Beatles at all. They had pretty much faded. It was the generation of MTV, and it was new bands, it was new wave, and people like McCartney and George Harrison and Ringo Starr were were around and about, but they weren't necessarily topping the charts. They were kind of trying to find their own feet musically, how they would fit into a new generation. Obviously, the introduction of the synthesizer changed music and video, which the Beatles were forerunners in going dating back to the 60s, certainly with their movies, Hard Day's Night and Help. But their video for Strawberry Fields was groundbreaking at the time. So the Beatles certainly weren't new to video, but they weren't really the phenomenon. And a really smart, and I want to talk about this with Robert today, a very shrewd marketing move is what catapulted them back. Even though in the mid-90s they put together a very elaborate, and thankfully they did it because not too long after George Harrison passed away, something called the Beatles Anthology, which was kind of a Beatles-produced documentary of their story with unheard music and unseen video. But it certainly came from the Beatles' perspective. And that caused a little, you know, resurgence in Beatlemania for a while. But what really capped it off was the Beatles, you know, organization, Apple, decided to put out a compilation album called One. And it was songs that, you know, nothing new here, just a full compilation of all the number one Beatles songs put all in one place. And it introduced the band to a whole new generation. It was a huge, huge seller internationally, and young people who really weren't that acquainted with the Beatles gobbled this up. They may have heard about the Beatles from their mom and dad or their brother and sister who were older, but all of a sudden, the Beatles' number one album became a number one album and really started this renaissance. And then after that, they did the Love Show with Cirque du Soleil in Vegas, which certainly helped to elevate the band's image. And since then, they have been very smart in reissues and putting out, you know, repackaging things, as well as reissuing the films and you know, box sets. This summer, of course, is the 50th anniversary of Sgt. Pepper. And so they really have done a masterful job in resurrecting their legacy. And I think at this point, now really imprinting it and making sure that it will last for a long time. Because for a while there, the Beatles were kind of around, but they certainly weren't universally respected by all generations. They are now, once again, an all-generation, you know, kind of pop icon. So we will talk about that and a lot more with Robert. And then later on, we'll do a version, another episode of what I like to call the Pop Culture Club. Once again, pop culture, culture club, there's another meaning. If you get it, great. If not, no biggie. And we'll have Mick Kaler on, who was with me last night. We were talking about a few different topics, and we'll talk about pop culture topics this morning with him. The one main one is that I want to talk about is, do you care about this eclipse? I understand it. It happens once every whatever. But there has been some major hype going on. It was one of those things that started very slow because we knew it was going to happen. And a lot of people weren't paying attention. But now, of course, the media has latched on because I think it's going to be, what, October 21st. And so now the media frenzy is focusing on it. And now everybody's, you know, people are upset that they didn't take, you know, they didn't make reservations to get to see it in Oregon, apparently, because that's where it's going to be. And then I just saw something that hurts, or one of the major rent-a-cars overbooked, and now people don't have cars, so they canceled their flights. But then Hertz is going to say we're going to fix that, and then they're mad because, well, I already canceled my flight because I couldn't get a car. And that. I'm like, do you know this eclipse takes about 5 seconds? And I know it's cool, but wow, do you really need to add this much drama into your life? And then you can't even look at it. You got to devise some contraption. Or apparently the cones in your retinas burn up. So we'll talk a little eclipse today in the Pop Culture Club, amongst other things. I am Elton Jim. I am filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. I'll be here till 5. So strap in, have some fun, get some coffee, because we're going to be here for a while. And we'll be back after this. No switching. Elton Jim this morning, filling in for Nick DiGilio. How do I leave my mark here when I do my fill-ins here? Oh, certainly. I mean, there's obviously a huge surge in ratings and a huge surge in listenership. I'm looking at the texts. The server crashed. Dan Sugarman Shagrew in the producer's room. I mean, he's on the phones constantly. People are constantly calling in. So certainly I'm making a mark. There's no doubt about that. But another way that I make sure that after I leave the studio, my presence is still felt, that can only be the sound of Cashmere Woods. That's right. That's my scent. That's my home scent. That's my scent for 2017. Glades Cashmere Woods. It's a hint of citrus and amber and vanilla. Oh, does it smell good? So now when people walk into the Showcase studio this morning, Steve Cochran's going to walk in here, and he's going to go, wow, it smells like Longgrove. It smells like a nice soap store, some delicious soaps. Like it smells like potpourri in here. But what's nice about Cashmere Woods is it doesn't smell like potpourri. It doesn't have that harsh smell. It's just enough there to let you know it's there, but it's in the background so it doesn't overpower. I'm Jim Toronto for Glade. I'm not getting any kickbacks from Glade. I just found a scent. I think it's important for your home to have a scent. We used to have Clean Linen by Glade. I went to Menards one time to pick up my clean linen. They were out of clean linen. I was in a quandary in the store. I searched. I looked at the other bottles. I was like I was at the Macy's counter when they attack you with those perfumes. So I started spritzing in the Menards, thinking, what's going to be my new scent? I don't have any clean linen. And I tried apple cinnamon. I love that combination. One of the best combinations in terms of taste there is, apple and cinnamon. Oh, gosh. But it was a little too harsh. Another one was potpourri, and it did smell like one of those, you know, frou-frou, soap stores. Didn't want that. And then I did this. And I never heard of Cashmere Woods. I never saw it before. Instantly fell in love. Bought one can, just brought it home. I can't impose a home scent on my wife. I didn't want to buy 10 cans and then just say, this is our new home scent. But I wanted her to discover it on her own. I didn't want her to see me spraying it. And then she'd go, what are you spraying? Because I'm always spraying. I'm like Felix Unger sometimes. And I just said, I'm going to spray it in some key strategic parts of the house and let her walk into it. Let it waft over her. Little did I know, she was upstairs. I was down by the vestibule and by the the living room, just spraying in key spots. She smelled it from upstairs and said, wow, what's that? What are you spraying down there? It smells fantastic. And I went, it does? Well, you know what it is? It's Cashmere Woods, and clearly now it's our new house scent. So I carried it along. I bring it along with me a lot. Dean Richards does not like it when I bring it to his show and I sit in with him and I've sprayed it a few times. I thought it was a joke. He seriously gave me the eye, like, okay, enough with the spray. But I'm alone here today, and Dan Sugarman is in the other room, so he really can't smell it. I don't know if you like it or not. Dan, did you like my
Yeah, I mean, sorry. Hot. Good morning.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I was so excited about it.
You sound like you're in a you don't sound clear.
I don't. How's that? Is that better?
A little.
I don't know.
You still sound like you're in a phone booth or something. But how do you like
it? I enjoyed it.
You enjoyed it?
I did. You sprayed it in the offices and
right.
Walked back. I'm like,
do I sense that maybe a Dan Shagrew may go and buy his own can?
We do not have a house scent yet. So
well, perhaps. Let me propose to you. I'm not saying that, once again, I'm here to spread the word. This is not something that that I just want to have for myself. So if the Shagrew family needs a home scent, I would strongly advise Cashmere Woods by Glade. Oh, hello, cheeky monkeys! Have you been watching The Gong Show? Gosh, Mike Myers plays a character as the host called Tommy Maitland, and he plays this English guy, and he comes out, you cheeky monkeys! And he's fantastic. I never was a huge fan of The Gong Show. But gosh, is Mike Myers doing a job with that every week? Anyway, on the other end of the news, we will, as I said, be talking Beatles. So if you're a Beatles fan or you just like to hear some interesting talk about, because I'm a huge Beatle fan too, so we're going to have a nice conversation. I'm looking forward to this. So stay tuned. I'm Elton Jim filling in for Nick DiGiulio. Jim Toronto with you here at WGN 720 AM. Filling in for Nick DiGiulio this morning. Be here till 5 o'clock. I'm going to be here till 5. I hope you will too. Phone number is 312-981-7200 if you want to get involved in the conversation at any time, whether it is falling right into what we're talking about, or, hey, you know what, if you want to cut a detour, I'm always open for that too, as long as it's a detour worth taking. If it's a dead end, then I'll kick you out of the car. But if it's a detour worth taking, hey, strap in. Someone who is strapping in with us right now is Robert Rodriguez, local Beatle expert. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jim. Great to be here.
Yeah, I'm very excited. I understand that you come on with Nick quite regularly to talk Beatles.
Yeah, at least every year in August, come right before the fest.
Yeah, and so when I was filling in, I asked producer Dan if are there any specific segments or guests, and he said, well, we usually have this guy in that talks Beatles. I'm like, oh, hey, you want to talk Beatles with me? I can do that. I mean, I know my nickname is Elton Jim. Don't get me wrong. But I am a huge Beatle fan, I must admit. Are you a Paul, a George, a Ringo, or a John?
Well, see, that's the thing that in my work as a writer and as a podcast host, we try to get away from the tropes that you have to pit them against each other. Together is where the strength was.
Ooh.
95% of what these guys
are. That is so Beatles and so Summer of Love of you.
Well, it's 50 years, man.
Well, I must say, I agree with you in many ways. And what the funny thing to your point is that what I have found is I go through many different peaks and valleys with each Beatle. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm a huge John Lennon fan. Mm-hmm. I respect him for his art. I respect him for his creativity. I respect him as a person. As I said, I wear my Imagine ring.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even wear my wedding ring, but I have an Imagine ring on. I've got a couple of pieces of his artwork at home, and we actually used the lyrics to his song "Grow Old with Me" as our wedding vows.
Yes,
when we got married.
It's the wedding standard.
Yeah, well, this was back in 1990 before it was that well known. Not that I've. And in fact, our picture on our invitation was a mock up of the Double Fantasy.
Okay, I thought you were going to say Two Virgins.
No, that's what we did now. I've got Polaroids of that.
Right.
But so certainly. But what I've also found is through the years, I then gravitate and really become a McCartney fan, and I've really, and I don't know if it's just me, I don't think it's just because he's passed away, but boy, I've become a huge George Harrison fan.
People tend to age into him.
Yeah, I just really have rediscovered his music, and once again, from a marketing standpoint, when they re-released that box set of All Things Must Pass, and I got to say, his last album, Brainwashed, was fantastic.
Yes, it was.
It was a great album. It wasn't just a great album for a guy that was sadly dying.
Right, that you were still mourning.
It was just a really good, I'll go back to that album now.
Yes.
If you never heard George Harrison's last solo album, Brainwashed, pick it up. It really is Any Road, the first song, right off the bat.
Right.
You're like, whoa, this isn't just some throwaway.
No.
Yeah.
Do you remember that performance he did spontaneously on VH1 with John Fugelsang?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Right.
Yeah.
It out of him.
And I've always, as you well know, few people know that Ringo was actually probably one of the more successful solo artists for the Beatles.
He was the first to have two number one hit singles from the same album.
How crazy is that?
Right.
Wings more than McCartney.
Yeah.
More than John.
John was the last.
I know. And that falls into my bailiwick because John's first number one was Whatever Gets You Through the Night with Elton John.
There you go. Yes. I see the crossover there with your Elton fan.
Yeah. And so it's really been interesting to see how, to your point, we don't need to pick one. And I think that's a good way to put it.
Yeah,
but certainly you can't deny that they all have their own, individual musical vision.
Right, and I think it's very typical of the fans to gravitate toward one, then another over a period of years. You know, usually start out, a lot of people really get into John Lennon when they're an adolescent because it's got all those appealing traits of, you know, he's a rebel, he's
right.
an authority, you know,
he got
the chip on his shoulder. You know, that really appeals to people of a certain age. And for some people, they never outgrow it, and that's fine. But then, you know, as you mature, you get older, have kids, get married, whatever, you know, you start seeing McCartney as that's really appealing. Here's a guy who had a wonderful, fantastic rock and roll marriage, raised his kids to be decent human beings.
Right.
You know, he's still out there doing what he loves. It's great. You know, as you get a little more philosophical, you start drifting to George.
Right.
You know, George's music has the benefit of not being oversaturated, so it's still fresh to a lot of people.
When right. Diving yeah, it's into not albums. As well known.
Right. Because he wasn't out there playing rock star.
And even you know, aside from some of the hits that we all know, like, you know, What Is Life and things like
My
that,
Sweet
and
Lord.
Obviously My Sweet Lord. But, you know, and one of my favorite songs, just in general, even forget it, it's a Beatle or not, is Blow Away. I love Blow Away from the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And this song, which was kind of from 33 and a third, which kind of was his comeback.
Yes, another great album.
Yeah.
That should have been the album he toured on.
Exactly.
Not Dark Horse.
It's got Cracker Box Palace on it, too.
Yeah.
But, so my, here, let me before we let's we can talk Beatles. I can talk with Beatles for you forever. But let's get a little background for our listeners here. So, you're from Chicago. Are you from the Chicago area?
Yeah,
you lived here
Chicago.
Your whole life. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so you are a writer. You just gave me one of your books here, which I find interesting. It's about Revolver, how the Beatles reimagined rock and roll, and why I think this book is. I haven't read it yet, but I certainly am looking forward to it, because as you I'm sure well know, and I'm sure you address in the book. What's interesting is obviously Sgt. Pepper, which is the 50th anniversary this year, has always been regarded as the masterpiece.
Yeah, it gets
the
all
Beatles.
The attention.
And however, I would say in the last, how many years would you say in the last 10 or 15, suddenly Revolver is people are saying, yeah, Sgt. Pepper is historic and it is a milestone and it, you know, it had its cultural impact.
Right.
But in pure music, people say it's Revolver.
Right, and I think what helped stir that renaissance was just the fact that when the CD era came about and suddenly the UK iterations were replacing, you know, the Capitol versions.
Yeah, and all the chopped up Capitol
versions. Well, right, and Revolver was the one that was hobbled by having three John Lennon songs removed in the States and come to CDs. Now it's all 14 tracks. You get the real sense of their vision as it was presented in 66. So now all of a sudden with fresh ears and eyes, you can look at it and go, oh, my God, this is what they did. It's amazing.
So how old are you, if you don't mind me asking?
Take a guess.
I don't know. You look pretty young, but at the same time, you're clearly a B. I mean, you got to be in your, are you 35, 40?
Oh, bless you.
What are you?
55.
Get out of town! You're 55?
Yes, sir.
Wow. I'm 53, and I thought I looked pretty good, but my God. What are you drinking?
Well, I am a vegetarian.
Very good. Wow. Good for you. So, yeah, so we're around the same age.
Uh-huh.
So do you have brothers and sisters?
I do.
Now, what's interesting is, how did you get into the Beatles? And I'll explain how I did, but how did you get into the Beatles?
I was sort of vaguely...
Because we're born after...
Right.
We're born during Beatlemania, but by the time we became cognizant, they were already broken up.
I was aware of the Monkees before I was aware of the Beatles.
Me too.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. I mean,
they were inescapable.
Yeah.
Cereal boxes.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. So I did have two older brothers that bought records, and so I was visually familiar with both the Apple label and the yellow and orange Capitol Swirl label
being
in the house.
Yeah, yeah.
But I didn't distinguish like who was doing what. You know, it was all just music. It wasn't – the real gateway for me was after the breakup, the Red and the Blue albums coming out.
Yeah, which was for a lot of people because that was a consolidation of pretty much those, what he's talking about. And I don't – I mean, those are on CD, and those were two double albums split up between, what was it, like 63 or 64 and 67, and then 67 to 70.
It was 62 to 66, Love Me
66,
Do through Yellow Submarine.
And then 67
and then,
to 70.
Yeah, Strawberry Fields.
So every greatest hit was there. So that was your crash course on the Beatles.
It really was. And it's funny, in retrospect, once you get all the albums and start looking at these things a little more critically, it's like, wow, they really stiffed Revolver in this set.
Oh, interesting.
But it's very Rubber Soul heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just interesting because I know that they were put together on the fly because they were battling a pirate set that was being sold on TV at the time that was Needle Drops. Somebody had the brass to put out there and sell on TV.
How funny.
So it was thrown together quickly. But but as the gateway, it serves its purpose, just as Beatles 1 is now.
Right, yeah, and I mentioned that. I mean, that was such a – I mean, at the time, you know, as a longtime Beatle fan, I was like, well, what do I need this for?
Right.
You know, I've got all these songs, but to your point – it wasn't aimed at me.
No, it was not.
It was aimed at the younger generation to say, hey, folks.
Here's your entry
point. Here's your entry point, and here's all the number one songs, and we're going to put them all in one place to blow you away, to just show mm-hmm. how much quality was there in a consistent basis.
Right, from one group of four guys.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
I mean, what, 13 albums?
Yeah, 12 UK albums.
And basically, you know, in terms of them being a phenomenon from 63, 6 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, seven-ish.
But they stopped working in August 69.
So crazy.
Yeah.
You know, it still is an amazing legacy. And so basically your brother sort of turned you, so you
I was
listened
sort of vaguely
to the,
aware, yeah. Like, you know, when Uncle Albert came out in 71, you know, Paul McCartney solo song, to me, I thought it was the Beatles because I didn't have a real frame of reference.
Yeah.
Come to find out years later when I'm researching one of my books, uncredited was George Martin who did the arrangement on that.
Oh.
Yeah, his name's not on the album, but I found it out, so that explains that.
And as I said, you know, it was interesting, too. So I was an only child, and so I had to really discover music on my own. My parents were older, and so I had to discover. And what really worked for me, in terms of what you're saying about these gateway kind of things and this repackaging, if you remember, the Rock and Roll album came out
rock
in about 74, 76, was it? And they released the Beatles version of Rock and Roll Music, the Chuck Berry song.
Mm-hmm.
And so then that one got airplay and then got to Get You Into My Life became
a single.
Mm-hmm. And I had never even heard that because I just was hearing your usual Beatle hits.
Yeah, She Loves You, I Wanna Hold
Your Hand. Exactly. And so that one really helped me. You know, my awareness, but I'm going to confess this to you as a Beatle fan. You may look at me like, boy, are you a jerk? And that's fine. I'm used to that. What really introduced me to a deeper sense of the Beatles catalog was the horrible Sgt. Pepper's movie.
And that served a purpose.
And that soundtrack.
Sure.
Because there were deep cuts like Oh Darling and other songs
Carry
in that movie.
Yeah.
Carry That Weight. Now, the movie was awful, and some of the versions were terrible on that album.
George Burns.
Yeah, George Burns doing Fixing a Hole. Hello, Gracie, I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in. I mean, what the hell is that? But you know, Robin Gibb does a great version of Oh Darling.
Yes, he does.
And, you know, Earth, Wind & Fire, obviously, with Gotta Get You In My Life, and my gosh, you know, Aerosmith's Come Together is a great version of that. But that really, I'm almost embarrassed to say it because by then it was, what, 1977 or 78?
78. Mm-hmm.
And so this is long past. But as I said, you know, the Beatles, when they broke up, you know, they did their individual things. And the collective of that, you know, you were hearing their hits.
Mm-hmm.
And and once again, I had those two albums that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And so that horrible movie and that soundtrack actually opened me up to go, okay, where's this Oh Darling song from?
Right.
And that's when I did my recognizance.
Yeah, your reverse engineering.
And then discovered it, and then that was it.
Right.
You know.
Blew you away.
Yeah. So that's interesting. So you did almost, you're almost like Almost Famous, where your brothers or your older siblings passed the music on to you.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. I was familiar with the stuff, and I knew visually what it kind of looked like, but it was a while. You know, once I reached an age where I had spending money and I could start, you know, buying, you know, going to EJ Corvettes and
definitely
the great record department.
Corvettes and, you know, Goldblatt's had a good one.
Oh, yeah.
Polk Brothers. Mm-hmm. There was where are you born? What area of the city were you born?
I lived in the west side and then moved out to the suburbs.
Okay, because I was in the northwest side and there was this department store at Six Corners, like near Cicero and Irving called Keys. And they had a great record department too, and I would buy my albums and my 45s there too.
Uh-huh.
And Sears actually didn't have a bad record department.
Mm-hmm.
I used to buy some
stuff. Sears at Six Corners.
Yeah, still there.
Oh,
it's actually the last one.
Is that right?
Left in the city.
Wow.
Yeah, but anyway, we're talking to Robert Rodriguez here, a obviously devoted and very knowledgeable Beatle fan, and he will continue to talk about not only the Beatles but also his appearance this weekend at the Fest for Beatle Fans. We can't call it Beatle Fest anymore, right?
Right, but everybody does.
Yeah. And you're going to be on, what, two or three panels?
Yes.
One each day,
I think so, yeah.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been doing that for how many years now?
Since, 10 years now.
Wow.
Since my first Beatle book came out.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So how many Beatle books have you written?
5 are out right now.
Nice.
And that's not counting ones that I've contributed chapters to that are like compendiums. And then I've got another couple in the works.
Excellent. So we're talking Beatles here. If you had any Beatle questions or you just want to share some Beatle stories or who's your favorite Beatle, even though Robert does not like to talk about that. once again, phone number is 312-981-7200 or just feel the eavesdrop on our conversation right here at WGN 720. I'm Elton Jim filling in for Nick DiGiulio. We'll be back right after this. No switching. Why, thank you, Paul. He's certainly in our lives, as have the Beatles been since, well, at least in America. I mean, true Beatlemania, obviously the Beatles were popular internationally in 1963, but on February 7th, when they landed in New York, that's when I think Beatlemania officially started.
Officially, yeah. Unofficially, a few weeks before that.
Right. I'm Elton Jim Toronto, filling in for Nick DiGiulio. My guest this morning is Robert Rodriguez, who is a Beatle expert and Beatle author and all-round Beatle guy. And I'm still amazed that you're 55 years old.
Well,
I mean, I don't know if you guys are watching. You know, you can go to WGN.com and watch. Can they watch us, Dan? Is it up right now? The feed? The cameras online? Okay, go to WGN.com and go online and watch. I think you can watch this. And tell me if this guy looks like he's 55 years old. That's ridiculous. It's like there's got to be a picture of you somewhere, like Dorian Gray, that's aging much worse than you are.
Shh.
Shh. Boom, boom, boom. Anyway, so Robert will be appearing this weekend at the all 3 days of the fest for Beatle fans, formerly called Beatle Fest, at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare. And that is a, as I said to Patty Vasquez at the beginning during our crosstalk, if you're not a Beatle fan, you know, I mean, don't be intimidated, but this is hardcore Beatle stuff. Now, how many years has Beatlefest been in Chicago?
Since 77.
Now, that's amazing. Now, there is one in New York.
Yes.
And that is this, but that's the longest one.
Yeah, that was the original one.
And how long has that been going on?
Since 74.
74. Mm-hmm. So that's amazing. Yeah. And think about that, only 3 or 4 years after they broke up.
Right.
Now, the head of this, his name is Mark
Lapidos.
Lapidos. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've been to Beatlefest a couple of times, but I regularly get their all of their mailings, and they've got a store. And as I said, I've bought many things. I've got one of my favorite hooded sweatshirts is the John Lennon self-portrait that I bought many years ago, which I don't even see anymore, which I'm so glad I have it. It's this black one that is really cool. I still wear it. It's getting frayed around, but I still love wearing it. I've bought several different things. And so what's great about that is, as you're saying, his family, you know, it's a family business, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Like him and his wife and his kids?
Yeah, Carol, and then Michelle, Joni, and Jessica, who you see growing up in the pages of the catalog, you know, modeling toddler clothes back when and onesies. And, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I feel bad because now that they're modeling the different things, like you said, and so there's these two girls. I remember them as teenagers, and now they're like women.
Yes.
I mean, how old are they?
I think at least 30.
And I remember them like as teenagers wearing these things, you know.
It's amazing.
Yeah. So, and I remember, you know, when I've called in and ordered stuff over the phone, I probably talked to his wife or one of them.
The family affair. Yep.
Yeah. And so what a great tribute to them that they had the foresight to start this, and what a tribute to Beatle fans that they've been able to continue the passion to support something like this. Now, why was Chicago chosen as one of the locations?
Well, it's centrally located. You know, if you go back to the 70s, they were trying it out in Philadelphia and Dallas and San Francisco, all over the place. But the Chicago one, you know, maybe because it's centrally located, maybe because Midwestern fans tend to be very, you know, fervent about, you know, the Beatles. But it is traditionally been the biggest attendance one.
In Chicago?
Yes.
Even more than New York?
Even more New York, excepting like when it's a special event like the 50th anniversary of the Solomon Show back in 2014. Right. That broke all records.
Oh,
but,
did it?
But that was a one-of-a-kind thing.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but Chicago traditionally pulls in more people.
Well, you know, Terry Hemmert, who is probably Chicago's honorary Beatle fan from XRT, who I actually know somewhat. I had we went to the same college.
Elmhurst College?
Yeah, I went to Elmhurst College. Okay. And I was on radio, and I actually got an internship at XRT, so I got to know Terry somewhat. We still email back and forth. And so, you know, her credibility as a Beatle fan is certainly unquestioned. She's been the MC for how long already?
Since pretty early on. I think 78 might have been her first year.
And what's always great about this is that, you know, it's like I said, it's really 3 days of being completely enveloped in everything Beatles. There's a great, you know, merchandise kind of bazaar. You can buy anything you want, especially now, I would assume. Mm-hmm. The merchandise has to be off the wall.
Yeah,
what you can get.
Yeah, everything imaginable.
Yeah.
Every kind of shirt and clothing and, you know, books, puzzles, lunch boxes,
and
luggage.
You know, then they have like what Robert is involved in. He'll be in three different panels, so they actually have some very insightful and intelligent, you know, discussion and sharing of opinions about the music and about all the different things that, you know, the band was involved in and its impact in today. And then they've got the tribute bands, and they really do a great job of digging up people, no pun intended, you know, from the Beatles past who have worked with either with the band or with the individual members. I mean, this year, my gosh, Denny Lane.
Yes.
Former
Wings.
Guitarist of Wings, who was, you know, in the Moody Blues.
Right.
You know, yeah,
Go Now.
Yeah. We'll run over some of the names as well. So we're talking to Robert Rodriguez. He's going to join us, continue to join us after the news. So once again, we'll continue to be talking about Beatles and the Fest for Beatle Fans, blah, 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 that will happen this weekend, and we can find out how you can get tickets to that too. So stick around. We got a splendid time is guaranteed for all here at WGN. I am Elton Jim, and I'm filling in for Nick DiGilio. We'll be here till 5. Well, thank you, Paul. I think the show's been getting better minute by minute, but it's nice to get a Beatles perspective on that. So thank you, Paul. Much appreciated. Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. My guest is Robert Rodriguez, who is a local Beatles expert and historian and author. How many books have you written now?
Books generally?
About
Beatles
the Beatles.
Books? Oh, 5 are in print.
Is
right
this
now.
Your most recent?
No, that's the one that's gotten the most attention, though.
About Revolver, how the Beatles reimagined rock and roll, and as I was saying earlier, well, certainly Sgt. Pepper, which this year is celebrating its 50th anniversary, and as well as the Summer of Love. And so everybody talks about the cultural impact and how Sgt. Pepper really elevated rock and pop music to another dimension, how it was received, how it was viewed. Clearly the album cover, kind of the concept, the photograph, all the little, the goodies, the cutouts and everything. But there has been this movement within Beatle world that, as you said before, Revolver. And I got to say, I like Sgt. Pepper.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great album, but I agree. I don't know if it's the ultimate Beatle album. There are moments that are amazing on it.
Well, the presentation was phenomenal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, album jacket and cutouts and all that stuff, like you say. And the timing, you know, the one thing the Beatles couldn't control was just right on the money.
Yeah, it was scary how they tapped. They were right at the – they helped push it, but that whole hippie, you know, psychedelia, you know, the whole shift of the baby boomers – and the Summer of Love, yeah, they were right. I mean, they kicked it off. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I mean, as a media event, you couldn't do better.
Yeah.
I mean, all these forces.
But I have to tell you, if I sit down and want to listen to a Beatle album, I will either go to Rubber Soul or Abbey Road.
Okay.
That is sort of, now, I mean, I like the early stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But what I like about what I like about Rubber Soul is that it was another shift.
Mm-hmm.
And like a lot of times, people even say that Rubber Soul was the one, instead of Revolver kind of being the one that shifted from all the I Love You songs and the Teeny Bopper songs.
Rubber Soul was definitely a step forward from the sort of beat group stuff they were doing up until then.
Yeah.
Help being the previous album.
Yeah.
Suddenly, I don't think John Lennon, and this is even as much as I love the White Album, I don't think he delivered a more advanced and higher level group of compositions than he did on Rubber Soul.
Yeah.
You know, with Girl, Norwegian Wood, In My Life.
Yeah.
You know, The Word. Just he really hit that sweet spot there. And, you know, in Nowhere Man. And then he sort of maintained it, but he kind of got, for Revolver, a little diverted into his acid path.
Yeah.
And so he was getting more experimental, which is commendable. At the same time, Paul was in ascent as a songwriter. You know, look at the stuff that Paul delivered for that album. You know, Good Day Sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
Here, There, and Everywhere. Got to Get You Into My Life. You know, he was really hitting his stride as a songwriter himself. So, you know, how do you quantify art? You know, you really can't. And but if I wanted to make the Pepper argument, I would say, well, if you look at, you know, do a Google search on what are the most popular Beatles songs of all time, the biggest concentration isn't from Pepper.
No.
It's from Abbey Road.
Right.
As its favorite to go, as well as the most covers. You know, there's plenty of other Beatles albums that have more people doing covers of them than Pepper. So
yeah.
Two ways you can measure things as far as greatness goes. I mean, the case I make, you know, and I'm not here to tear down Pepper for anybody's benefit.
No.
But the case I would make, as I did in the Revolver book, is that it was a far more high-level four-way collaboration on Revolver than it would ever be again.
Yeah.
That was the high watermark.
Right.
You know, you have John, who is basically kind of an acid casualty by 67 through the Pepper sessions. Paul and George Martin are really driving that project.
Yeah.
You know, George has now been to India. You know, the Beatles lead guitarist, all the songs he wrote that were recorded that year were written on keyboard. He's sort of like stepping back.
Right.
And as Ringo said, you know, we got the madness out of our system with that album. Then we went back to making rock and roll after that. So, you know, it as a event, yes, it is something, Pepper, as a media thing. But is it the most important or greatest Beatles album? There's ways to undermine
what that. A lot of time people ask me, because I'm such an Elton fan,
yeah,
what's your favorite Elton song? I'm like, well, what's your favorite kid?
Right.
I can't do that. But if you're sitting down by yourself,
mm-hmm,
all alone, and you want to listen to a Beatle album, what do you grab? What do you grab for?
Well, typically for all my favorite artists, I tend to gravitate toward the double albums because, to me, they take you on a journey.
There's
peaks
more
and
there.
Valleys.
Yeah,
and there's more material. Yes.
Yeah.
So the White Album would be it for me. But I'm not saying this is the greatest Beatle album. Everybody should be their favorite. I wouldn't make that case because my tastes are subjective as anybody else's. You know, I just think that that's got the most intrigue to it. It's just a chaotic masterpiece is what it is.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, it's a double album and it is all over the board.
Mm-hmm.
There is no narrative. There is no, I mean, you know, Sgt. Pepper really, you know, it's always viewed in some cases as the first concept album, but it's a very loosely based concept.
Yeah.
It really was. If it was a concept in its origin, it wasn't fulfilled.
Well, the concept case, if you have to make a case for it, the concept is, let's not sound like Beatles.
Yeah, we want to be a different band.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Let's have our alter ego.
I mean, what's so great about the White Album, to your point, is not only is it just the amount of music there, but you really have a really, it's a history lesson in genres.
Yes, exactly.
You know.
And it's really almost a continuation of Revolver, which is the same thing. There's no two songs that are back-to-back in Revolver that are the same sort of style. Everything is different, followed by some other exercise. You know, people, if you want to take it to an extreme, say, well, every song on there blueprinted a particular niche of rock and roll. You know, Tomorrow Never Knows was electronica,
right.
And,
yeah,
you know, Baroque and all this other stuff. You know, I that was certainly probably not in their heads. They were just trying to whatever arrangements they came up with. What really was the advance in Revolver was they were freeing themselves of the burden of anything we record, we have to play on the road. Let's use the studio the way Brian Wilson's been using
it.
And so they went all out with the experimentation and effects.
Well, I think about the White Album, I'm like, I you know, to some extent, as I said, I had to do a lot of my musical experimentation and knowledge on my own. I didn't have anybody to pass it kind of down to me. I started listening here in Chicago to WLS and WCFL, and I was a top 40 fan.
Right.
And that's where my initial, you know, interest
taste
was
shaped.
Yeah. And then as I got older, I began to get into, and then, you know, stations like The Loop were in XRT were playing, you know, other tracks.
WMET.
And MET. Oh, I used to love MET. Those kind of stations. And so then all of a sudden we're getting into album-oriented rock and deeper tracks and, mm-hmm, and then these different bands. But, you know, when I think about the White Album, I have to think, like, Rocky Raccoon may have been the first country song I ever heard.
Mm, yeah.
You know, right? I mean, because I wasn't a big country fan, but here were the Beatles introducing me to country music.
Yes.
You know, and so that's what's kind of great about that album. But I've always said, too, to your point about, McCartney hitting his stride as a writer and then working with George Martin and driving it, I've always felt like there is no greater Beatle fan than Paul McCartney.
Yes.
I think Paul McCartney is the biggest Beatle fan there is.
He wanted the band to continue more than anybody did.
And then the irony is he officially broke it up.
Right. And the bigger irony is that within the Beatles, he didn't see how his perfectionist tendencies and, like, let me show you how to play that.
Yeah.
We're splintering
exactly.
Esprit de corps.
Yeah. And I think what I think, too, is, you know, you really can't underestimate the death of of Brian Epstein, because he really was the fifth Beatle, and he really was the glue that kept those four divergent personalities together. You know, and even though they would have changed, I still think that they liked having that one guy who they felt was on their side.
Trusted him. It loved them. Was in it for the right reasons.
And when he left, there wasn't that one place, and then the hangers-on that were all around each Beatle kept whispering in their ears, well, you're the best, you're the best. And that may have happened to some extent, but I think Epstein would have been able to cut that off. And when you think about what happened, I believe that there would have probably been a time when the Beatles individually, because they were moving in individual ways, they didn't need to officially break up.
Right. The precedent wasn't there yet.
Yeah, exactly. No one did like the Stones.
Right.
Where they just sort of went off, did some stuff, and came back.
Right. Nobody had done that to that point.
There was a feeling that, if you don't play together, that means you break up.
It's irrevocable.
And I wonder if Epstein was there, if he would have said, okay, guys, look, Paul, you want to do something, or John, you want to go off with Yoko and do some stuff? That's fine. Another year and a half, we'll come back.
Return to the mothership. Yeah,
yeah, and he would have been, I think, that orb to your mothership thing. I think he would have been the sun, the gravitational pull.
Yes.
That could have allowed them to go off on their different orbits, but then say, okay, it's time to do Beatles again.
The safe place.
Yeah.
If he had not died, he was the guy that had taken the lease of the Savile Theater in London. You know, here they are, the first year they've stopped touring, they put out Sgt. Pepper. You know, we've talked about this on the podcast before. You know, with Brian's flair for presentation, and he was a very theatrical-minded guy, what if instead of, you decided you're not going to tour anymore, that's fine, you set up a week or a month's residency at that theater with an orchestra, the world comes to you, you can satisfy, you know, Paul's craving for an audience and still get your music out there with the presentation that serves it.
Yeah, I mean, sort of like the peace event All you need is love.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Our World broadcast.
Yeah, the Our World. I mean, that's a perfect example of that.
Right, and he arranged that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that's a perfect, and you need that kind of person who is thinking big picture and thinking down the road. The artists are thinking in the moment.
Yes.
And so you need that. When he was gone, then money people came in, and as I said, hangers-on came in, and it was kind of doomed. And I also think that the venom that was there initially during the breakup from Lennon at McCartney was more than just, you know, like you're saying, you know, play it this way, play it that way. I really believe, and I can't really deny it to some extent, that what really made John Lennon mad was, you don't get to break up my band. Let's not forget whose band, the Beatles.
Right.
It was John Lennon's band, and he asked Paul McCartney to join it. And so, as much as John was moving away from being a Beatle, I still think he resented the fact that it was Paul who put an end to it. If anybody's breaking up the Beatles or stopping the Beatles, I started it, I'm going to end it.
That clearly meant a lot to him, that sort of satisfaction, that claim of agency and ownership of the Beatles.
Yeah.
You know, people point to September of 69 when he walked into Apple and said, I quit, but didn't announce it publicly and certainly didn't act as if he'd quit because he continued Beatling.
Right, exactly. You
know, he's 90% of the last Christmas message they put out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I don't think he really meant it. In fact, there's a tape of an Apple meeting where it basically reels it back in the fall of 69. But I think Paul had been so dreading those words out of John's mouth, it shattered him. And he took him at his word, but didn't really take John seriously until he put out Instant Karma at the end of January 1970.
Right.
Suddenly he's putting out something outside the Beatles that's actually viable.
Right.
Not one of these semi-experimental things.
Yeah, not
doing
two versions
right,
or
wedding
like
album or
yeah,
something
right,
like that.
Right.
He's putting out something that it literally is competing in the charts against the Let It Be single. It's number three to Beatles number one. I think that was finally scared Paul into, okay, I guess John needs it. You know, this semi-experimental album I've been working on, I need to get serious. And only then did he go into a real studio and record Maybe I'm Amazed and Every Night, the two best songs, the most fully realized albums. Right. And I think he thought, well, if John's leaving, I better get my act together.
Yeah. But I really believe that that they would have, they didn't need to break up, but they needed someone to tell them that. That would have said it's okay to go and you know, experiment and create your own identity if you like. But this remember that you can always come back.
Right. And the guy that three of the Beatles went with, Alan Klein.
Right.
You know, it's management 101. The first rule is keep your clients happy and productive. What does Higo do? Yeah. He splinters the band, drives a wedge between them, antagonizes Paul from the get-go.
Yeah.
You know, who had been his golden goose, if you really want to look at it, who'd been writing all the hits singles for the last couple of years. You know, what an idiot. Yeah. You know, maybe he thought, well, I'll make more money if I've got three artists I'm representing instead of one.
And the sad part is, I really believe, regardless of all the animosity and all the things, and Lennon always, you know, saying how, okay, the Beatles, I think at the end of the day, Lennon did appreciate it. You read his last interview, he was actually being very nostalgic about the Beatles and talking about specific Beatles songs. And I think with time, I really believe if he had not been killed, an event like perhaps Live Aid in 1985, mm-hmm. or some kind of a charitable event, would have been the impetus that I believe, at the very least, they would have got together for a performance.
Well, things were moving in that direction.
Yeah.
You know, Ringo had reached out to them all because he had a new album on the horizon after being without a label for a couple of years, and they'd all committed to working on it, including John. The last time they saw each other, a couple of weeks before he was killed, he gave them cassette demos of some songs he'd written for him.
Because didn't he write Nobody Told Me for
Correct.
Ringo?
Correct, yes. Yeah, he'd written that, and he was giving it to Ringo, as well as a song called Life Begins at 40.
Right, yeah.
And so Ringo didn't have the heart to record them after that, but things were moving in that direction. And they were all at a point in their careers where it would have made sense for them to do something, even if they didn't call it Beatles.
Right.
You know, Ringo's getting back in the game. John's getting back in the game. Wings is breaking up that year. And George, for the first time in his career, has a solo album handed back to him by Warner Brothers.
Right.
Saying, this isn't commercial enough. Yeah. They were all in a place where it would have made sense to work together.
I really do believe that, regardless of the animosities and the time that passed, I really do believe they would have... We've gotten back. We're talking with Robert Rodriguez, and he's going to be a part of the Fest for Beatle Fans. And after the break, we will talk about some of the stuff that you'll be doing specifically at the Fest for Beatle Fans, as well as how you, the audience, if you want to go. If you're a Beatle fan, whether you're a newbie or a longtime one, if you've never been to Beatle Fest or the Fest for Beatle Fans, you got to go at least once. I've been there about two or three times. I haven't been there in a while. Maybe I'll check it out this year. We'll see. I'm Jim Toronto filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning, and we will be back right after this, so no switching. And here comes Elton Jim, WGN, talking with Robert Rodriguez, Beatle fan, author, and going to be a panelist at the Fest for Beatle Fans, which is this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the O'Hare Regency.
Yeah, Rosemont.
Yeah, in Rosemont there, right on River Road. For information about the Fest, you can go to www.thefest.com. So you're going to be on three different panels. You're going to be on one on Friday night at 10:45.
Mm-hmm.
What's so special about Sgt. Pepper?
Mm-hmm.
We sort of talked about that.
Yes, we did.
Sunday at 12:45, Beatles in Illinois.
Yes.
Of course, we all know that George Harrison's
Benton.
Sister lived in
downstate,
and he came here before Beatlemania,
yes.
Wondering, is anybody playing the Beatles here? Are there any Beatles songs here in America?
Yeah, funnily enough, he never found out that Dick Biondi had.
Right. Oh, really?
Yeah.
He never found out?
In early 63, yeah.
Oh, interesting. And then on Sunday at 4:30, the Beatles, Chicago Beatles Scholar Panel. So you are a scholar.
Oh, boy.
Wow, look at you.
I wear my mortarboard.
Very cool. Now, also, not only have you written several books, but you have a regular Beatle podcast?
Correct. Something About the Beatles.
And how do I find that?
Somethingaboutthebeatles.com. It's on iTunes and every other podcast platform that's out there, basically.
And how often do you post something?
Once a week.
Very cool.
Yeah. It's a lot of work because a lot of times we'll have guests. I'm not going to tell who we've got coming up, but we've had Ann Wilson before, Marshall Crenshaw.
Oh, Marshall Crenshaw.
Yeah.
I love Marshall. I played him on my college radio station. His debut album is one of the best albums ever.
Yes, it is.
His first album, Marshall Crenshaw.
And they're reissuing a deluxe version of Field Day right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, Whenever You're on My Mind. I love that.
Yes,
a great album.
Our Town, all these bonus tracks.
Yeah. Oh, Marshall Crenshaw. You ever heard of Marshall Crenshaw? Go look him up. Fantastic. Well, that's very cool. So we have been talking to Robert about the Beatles, and you certainly know your stuff. We were just talking off the air, and I thought it would be interesting because we were just saying, what song should we play coming in from the break? And mm-hmm. so Robert said, well, let's do something from Abbey Road. And so he picked Here Comes the Sun. And it's interestingly, we both have a very similar connection to that song. Explain why that song is special to you.
Well, funnily enough, I mean, it was when I was having my first child born, my son, that was the song I had ready in the room when he was being born. So it was the first music that hit his ears when he was exiting the womb.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, the last 3 years of my mom's life, she was living with my wife and I. We were her caregivers. And my dad was sick at the same time, too. They both passed away within the same 3 year time period. And my dad was in a nursing home. My mom was living with us, and it was a very chaotic time. It was a very difficult time. If anybody has been a caregiver, it's a very difficult time. It's a really life changing kind of thing to go through. And it was very difficult. And my dad passed away first. And about a year later, my mom passed away. And when she passed away and we had the funeral and everything, I remember going home and I put on Here Comes the Sun because it just felt like, For 3 or 4, for 3 years there had been clouds around, yeah. and now it had settled and they were at peace, and the sun was coming out again.
Yeah,
and it was that song, and then I bought a piece of art that John did. It's he and Yoko kissing, called Starting Over, and we have that hanging because it's like, okay, we get to start over again now.
Right.
You know, it's been in that song the way it's been so long since we took the time. Mm-hmm. You know,
no one's to blame. That was
like us. We need to start over again because we had been so, involved with all this caregiving that now it was just my wife and I again, mm-hmm. just sort of like Yoko and John.
There's a Beatles song for every life occurrence.
Yeah, it really is. Well, that was the great thing about them is that they really were the first group to really look internally and begin to start to say, not just loving, the little teeny bopper songs. They mm-hmm. started to, to get.
They took the personal and made it universal.
And that legacy, lives on. Robert, I could talk to you for hours. I've really enjoyed our conversation. I hope you did too. So see Robert. Go to the www.fest.com this weekend. He'll be at three different panels. And if you're a Beatle fan, you should definitely be going there because at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare, because it is the place to be. It's ground zero if you're a Beatle fan. And I might check it out, too. So thanks for joining me, and hope we can talk again sometime.
Absolutely.
All thanks, right. Jim. I am Jim Tirano, filling in for Nick DiGilio. And it's Elton Jim here at WGN, 720 AM. About 3:36, be here till 5, filling in for Nick DiGilio the last couple of days. I've really enjoyed my time here. It's fun to work actually 2 days in a row. Wow, it's like a real job. And thanks to producer extraordinaire for the last couple of days, Dan Chagrou, the Sugar Man, been helping the ship run very smoothly. I feel like Captain Stubing, but you are certainly... You're a combination of Julie, my cruise director, and Doc. What was the Isaac was the bartender, Gopher, Doc. You're all of them all rolled into one. So you're keeping the love boat moving straight into our destination. So I appreciate that.
Thank you very much.
As I said yesterday, it was funny. I asked how to pronounce Dan's name. He said it was Chagrou, like sugar. That's why I call him the Sugar Man. And I found it interesting how he used sugar as the SH word to describe himself as opposed to that other SH word. You didn't go for that one, did you?
Not this time.
That's a family show.
Yeah.
So, let's go right to the phones. I'm playing the Culture Club song, Karma Chameleon, because this is... Well, I'll actually let my guest explain it. How you doing there, Mixter?
Doing real good, but how about yourself?
Okay, this is the Pop Culture Club, Mick. Why am I playing Karma Chameleon?
Well, that song was done by Culture Club.
Yeah.
By Georgian Culture Club, and there's culture there.
Right.
There's culture with us, and it's the Pop Culture Club. There's a tie-in. It's very pithy.
There's many layers to this show. As I said, I don't know how much I'm being appreciated now, but I believe in like 70 years.
Yeah,
people are going to find the tapes and go, "My gosh!" I guess I have to go for like the Lenny Bruce kind of thing.
That's right. Appreciated when you're long gone.
Yeah, I'm not going with the Dane. What's that comedian's name? That real popular comedian,
Dane Cook.
Yeah, Dane Cook. I'm clearly not in that. I'm not trending.
No.
So I'm going to have to be one of those guys that's going to be dead for 40 years and say, you know, I loved him.
And you know what? Death is a great career maker.
Who
right?
knew? I at this point, I have to say I want to be like the Randy Newman of radio. You know, always, respected, appreciated, sarcastic, and hopefully someday, you know, I can win an Oscar as well. But anyway, there are many layers to the show. So on the Pop Culture Club, Mick was joining me yesterday. We talked about a few different things. But I want to talk about a couple of pop culture topics. Mick is certainly an avowed pop culture guru. He's been a radio producer for more than 15, 16 years in the Chicago area. Worked with some legends like Larry Lujak and Robert Murphy.
Ruined all their careers.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's funny, Mick. Larry Lujak was in Chicago radio for how long? How many years was he in Chicago radio?
Oh, a lot, like 20 years, something
yeah.
like that.
Mick went to work for him. He quit in three.
That's right. Got him out. Well, you know what? I think Larry and the rest of those guys, they all just saw the young bucks coming up and said, you know what? Can't keep up with guys like a Mick Kaler.
Oh, yeah. Keep telling yourself that. And Mick's work can continue to be heard on almost a weekly basis. He writes parody songs with a friend of his called Al Flash, and they are played with pretty good regularity on the WGN Morning News on Channel 9 every morning. Yeah. So,
well, thanks for bringing that up. And it's funny because actually I'm kind of bummed out because we had a new one in the works for Cub catcher Wilson Contreras.
And now he got hurt.
Yeah, I watched the game yesterday, and I see him pulling up lip when he's running the first. I'm like, oh, no, this screws up everything. Why'd you do this to me?
Yeah, I mean, because the same things that rhyme with Contreras don't rhyme with Bryant.
Yeah.
So you can't just put another name in there.
Yeah, exactly. So
and what did you find to rhyme with?
It gets healthy, and then we'll launch it.
What word did you find to rhyme with Contreras?
Well, part of it was Paris.
Oh, Paris. Nice. Yeah.
But I don't even want to give the rest of it away. It's like I don't want to give away too much of the movie preview. But but the song we picked, I picked to put together with this is actually kind of clever. So
oh, very good. And do you think they're going to play that this week sometime?
No, we haven't actually recorded it yet. Uh-oh. I've written it, but Al's been out of town. But again, we're going to wait until Contreras is back. Not only is he back, we want him hitting homers the way he has been.
Yeah, he's been on a tear. He's been on an amazing tear.
Yeah. Not just hitting homers, but big homers and long drives. So we're going to wait till he gets back from his injury, whatever it is. I hope the MRI today goes well. And then after that, he's got not only got to come back, but he's got to start hitting homers again like that.
No kidding. Well, you know, I was going to talk about a couple of topics here. We could switch the order because since we're talking about baseball, talking about the Cubs, there was a couple of topics that I wanted to talk about both on the north side and the west side, and not really from a sports angle. I'm not doing a sports segment here, although I love sports, but it's more from a pop culture standpoint because I believe that these both do play into that. So what was your take? A few weeks ago, I thought a really classy move by the Cubs organization was to give the beleaguered and battered super fan, if you will, Steve Bartman, a World Series ring.
Yeah.
And after, it's been since, 2003 when he did what every other fan would have done, and if
you look back at that play, other fans had their hands out the way he did.
He was not even, and it wasn't like he was the only fan, but sadly, he was right in the picture when the cameras went there, and he was right out of central casting for somebody. If you were angry because you feel that he did something wrong and killed the Cubs' chances, he looked nerdy. He had the Cub hat over his eyes, and he had the headphone in, and he had his Cub jersey, and he just looked the part of a nerdy guy that didn't know the rules. And meanwhile, like you said, there was another guy right next to him whose hand it hit.
Right.
And that guy got off scot-free, and Steve Bartman had to go into hiding. And I believe he may have even moved. You know, he was really underground for a while. I think he may have actually left the state for quite a while.
I don't remember if he did that or not, but I know that there was just a big shutdown, like where he worked. Nobody, you know, there was a whole directive, hey, do not talk about this, do not take calls, do not make comments. And he was just this, he went off the grid, even though I think he still stayed around. But it was a ridiculous situation.
And there was a documentary a couple of years ago, and they talked to the Wrigley Field and Cubs security people.
Right.
Who actually had to usher him out because he would have gotten killed.
And they had to throw him in a different jacket.
Yeah, they put him in a van, and they were driving. And I mean, it was almost like some CIA kind of, you know, decoy thing.
Right, it was a covert deal.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm sitting there going, why isn't anybody still to this day? This poor guy is getting blamed for this. It's so silly and superstitious. Meanwhile, nobody still continues to talk about the fact that there was the next play was a double play ball that got muffed by the Cubs shortstop.
Yeah.
That would have ended the inning and ended it all. A player, you mean a player on the field actually could have been blamed as opposed to some fan who did nothing wrong?
Well, I look back on it, and the first thing I think of is Moises Alou.
Oh, and he's the guy that did it because he was acting like such a big baby.
Little whiny baby when he throws his mitten out like he's in Little League.
Oh, he brought attention. He pointed to Bartman and he brought attention to it. Like you're saying, he acted like a 35-year-old, 7-year-old.
Well, there was that. And then, and obviously, you know, the Cubs, you would think that the front office would realize that this was a pivotal situation, not on the field, but as far as fans. I mean, you saw how Wrigley Field was. There's thousands of fans outside the park waiting for this World Series bid to happen.
Five outs away.
Yeah. Well, as you mentioned, the Cubs muffed it up with the muffed up play and then the other hits that came in, and they lost the game, and that was game six. But here's my issue. The Cubs, when they heard all that furor and all that was going on, the next day, Dusty Baker, manager, or whoever it was that was running the show as far as the front office, somebody should have come out front and said, hey, guess who blew that game? Cubs shortstop.
No kidding. What was his name? What was his name? Rodriguez.
Right up to it and owned it and said it had nothing to do
Gonzalez.
With foul ball.
Yeah, what was Gonzalez? Was Alex Gonzalez, I think.
Yeah, Alex Gonzalez, who was flawless at short all year.
And that was a
joke on that one.
And that was a tailor-made double play. They're
right
out of the inning. And then what people forget about, too, they were all blaming Bartman in this silly, you know, Chicago goat superstition crap. Meanwhile, the next day, you got Kerry Wood, your best pitcher, pitching, and he hits a 3-run homer. They were up 3-0 in game 7, and Bartman still gets blamed.
Yeah, like I said, it's just the Cubs, and I think it's a lesson probably for all sports, because especially in these days of, you know, and even then social media wasn't as huge as it is now, but this thing was just a major situation.
Oh, could you imagine if there was social media?
Oh, God.
Oh.
They would have tracked him down.
Oh, they definitely would have. My gosh, he is so lucky that social media wasn't as strong in 2003 as it is now. Oh my gosh, that guy's life would have been off the charts. Whatever he's experienced would have been 8 times.
Exactly.
And so I really do believe that it was a classy move by the Cubs, you know, to give him this ring, to acknowledge what he's gone through. And then I've been reading some of these things by some of these sports writers, and they were acting still, because they fed into that, a lot of them.
Oh, yeah,
at least initially.
They all made a lot of columns and a lot of money.
And they're like, oh, well, he doesn't deserve, well, you know, why doesn't this guy get one then? Why don't you give one to the pizza guy? It's like, you know, this guy's life was completely, given an upheaval out of no reason. As I said, every game you watch now, a foul ball goes and you see people reaching over. He did nothing that any other fan. It's a reaction that you do. I've done it myself. It's just a shame that it was at that moment. And once again, it was, you know, Moises Alou brings attention to it. And of course, then it becomes all this. So I thought the Cubs did how do you feel about it? Do you think that it was right for him to give it, or should they have just let it, or just not even acknowledge it and let it fade away?
No, I think this, this hopefully brings, as the, you know, they use that famous word, closure. I hope it brings closure to the issue. And even when the Cubs won the World Series last November, I felt that there was some kind of like, okay, they finally got their title, so can we put all this to rest as far as Bartman in 2003? Because everybody's also got to remember, Jim, you know, okay, let's say the Cubs win Game 6 and go to the World Series. Maybe they don't win the World Series.
Right. Exactly. You know? No.
And the other part is, okay, you've got that. All right, go back to 1984 when the NLCS was best of five. The Cubs win the first two games against the Padres, just kicking the snot out of them at Wrigley Field. Okay, they go to San Diego, and you know what the impetus was for San Diego's rally as far as, you know, folklore can go. Mike Royko's column.
Right, that's right.
Mike Royko writes this column in the Tribune, and he says, the Padres are dead. They won't show up. The fans don't care. This is all over. Let's go to the World Series.
Yeah, and then, of course, and then why doesn't Leon Durham become a GOAT for letting that ball go through his legs?
The ball goes right through him like Bill Buckner, okay?
With his Gatorade first baseman's mitt.
Right.
Ugh.
Yeah, so again, it's like you can go back to all these things and say, well, this is what happened because of this. So nobody blamed Royko or Leon Durham and all that.
Like I said.
And again, the educated fans knew what was going on.
And you know what? And Bartman deserves a lot of credit because in the last 15 years or whatever it's been, you know, 13, 14 years, he has never tried to exploit it. He has never tried to make money off of it.
He's offered big money for all sorts of endorsements and issues and things. And that's a true fan that said, you know what? No, this has nothing to do with me as far as that goes.
No, I think that he has conducted himself in a classy way, and I think the Cubs matched his class by giving him a ring, and hopefully he can go on with his life and actually go to a Cub game and maybe even throw out the first pitch someday. How cool would that be? We're going to take a quick break here. We're talking to Mick Kaler in our Pop Culture Club. We've got a few more topics to talk about. I hope you don't come and go. I hope you just come right here to 7:20 a.m. and you stay all the way until 5. I've been here since 2. We'll be here for another hour or so. I'm hanging around. I hope you will, too. I'm Elton Jim Toronto, filling in for Nick DiGiulio this morning. Was here yesterday and have enjoyed my time here. In fact, I will be back on WGN on Sunday morning from 9 to 12, filling in for Dean Richards, because then from 12 to 3, Dean will be hosting an Alzheimer's special. So I will be filling in for Dean from 9 till noon on Sunday morning. And then you can stay tuned and listen to Dean right after that for an Alzheimer's special. So, and then on Monday night, if you haven't had your fill of an Elton Jim, you have another chance on Monday night from 9 to 11. I think Justin Kaufman may be out on vacation. And so they're splitting up the shift there. I'm not sure who's going to be on before me from 7 to 9. But I'm going to be on from 9 to 11 on Monday. So Sunday, 9 to noon. Sunday morning, filling in for Dean Richards. And on Monday, from 9 to 11, filling in for Justin Kaufman. But right now, I'm filling in for Nick DiGiulio. And my guest here in the Pop Culture Club is Mick Kaler. How are you doing there, Mickster?
I'm doing good. You're like a utility infielder. They can plug you in anywhere.
Yeah, I'm like Dave Rosello. Carmen Fanzone.
Carmen, the trumpet player.
That's right. There's some club trivia for you. One last thing about Bartman before we get to the end of this, and then after the news, Mick will return, and we will talk about a few more pop culture topics. But what I wanted to say, too, is what I think you have to really give a nod. As I said, I thought it was a classy move by the Cubs to give Bartman a ring. Some people in the sports world were saying, oh, it was bet. You know, why bring it up? It just brings up this thing, and you didn't need to give him the ring, and there's other people that deserve it and all that. I thought it was a classy move. The guy's life was turned upside down for no reason. And you make a very good point. It wasn't this regime of the Cubs.
Right.
You know, it was Dusty Baker and everything. But the team as an organization and the team as a team itself, to your point, the next day and soon after that, they did not publicly condemn that or try to say, hey, give this guy a break. They almost kind of they didn't buy into it, but they didn't completely condemn it, which in a way is kind of endorsing it.
Right, exactly. It was just benign, just we're going to hold steady here. And after the Cubs lost Game 7, there was no coming forth saying, hey, don't blame it on my game. There was just, like I said, it was some people might say they were tone deaf. I just don't think they realized what they had going on and what fans were expecting.
And I guess I saw a quote, you know, because Dusty Baker was in town last week with the Nationals. And Dusty Baker, they asked him about the whole Bartman thing, and especially with the ring, to get his kind of feedback. And then I don't know if this is backtracking or not. You know Dusty. And he's like, oh, yeah, you know, I was so mad we didn't win Game 7 because I was really planning on putting him in the parade with me.
Jeez.
Yeah, I'm like, okay, then why didn't you come out and actually have, you know, go to the guy's house or have him stand next to you and for all the cameras to see and say, Cub fans, we blew it. This guy didn't.
Exactly, yeah.
And they never did that. And finally, at least, you know, some years ago, you know, at least, you know, now obviously in the glow of the World Series, all sins are forgiven. Even Joe Maddon's horrible overmanaging in Game 6 and 7.
Well, Joe got saved by Game 7's heroics after the rain delay.
The rain delay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he would have been the new Bartman. He would have been
exactly.
The new goat.
No more goat, no more cat, no more Gatorade mitt, no more Bartman.
And all sins are forgiven. But I'll tell you one thing. I mean, I'm not trying to pummel on the guy, but this is the first year. I mean, look at the Cubs. They're not running away with it. This is the first year of the Maddon regime where they're not playing, you know, up to optimum level. And Joe Maddon as a manager is starting to show some flaws.
Yeah. Well,
so we'll see. But we will be back after the news with Mick to talk about some more pop culture topics, including the eclipse. Mick, are you into the eclipse?
Not yet. It's coming up, isn't it?
Yeah. August 21st, I think. So we will talk some more Pop Culture Club after the news. Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning. Be here till 5 a.m. Then we'll pass it off to the morning or the opening bell. And then Steve Cochran starts the day off with his dysfunctional family at 6 a.m. Right now we're having a dysfunctional morning, I guess. But it's a fun kind. I'm just looking before I get started here. Mick, are you there?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking in the producer's booth here, and producer Dan Sugarman Shagru, don't change your headphones. Because that's what I'm commenting on right now. He has his headphones on,
mm-hmm.
with the, you know, the part that goes over the top of your head?
Yeah.
He has them in front of his, like, his forehead, like a headband.
Right.
And it just reminded me, do you remember, like, the last videos of, of Keith Moon?
Oh, yeah. Playing drums on Who Are You.
On Who Are You, exactly. You know exactly what I'm talking about. That's why I love Michaela. And so you look exactly like Keith Moon.
He's got those big headphones like that, the old school ones.
Yeah, he's got the old school ones, and he's got it across there. I'm like, he looks like Keith Moon in there.
That and a huge bottle of horse tranquilizers that I have.
Oh, that too. And he just threw a television onto Michigan Avenue.
Yeah, I drove a car into a swimming pool.
But people say, geez, you know, I've known Mick for 35 years. We met in college. We did radio and together at good old WRSE 88.7 FM. And we also did a lot of stuff. We were doing DJ stuff before it was cool.
That's right. We were doing high school hops,
yeah,
and weddings and bar mitzvahs.
But I always joke that we just met by chance, you know, at the radio station. But I always say that we're kind of twin sons from different mothers. And perfect example. So here, I mean, you can always say that, but here it is. So all I did was to say to Mick was, remember Keith Moon in that video, and I didn't even say the song.
Right.
And you said, yeah, Who Are You, when he's, and you knew the headphones. That you knew exactly what I was going to say.
It's a sickness we have.
I think there's like 7 people that may have gotten that reference, you know, with it was almost like a game show.
Yeah.
It felt like Password.
Yeah, it's like Final Jeopardy. It's like, how are you going to get that?
Yeah, how are you going to get Keith Moon wearing headphones in the Who Are You video? You got it on 2. The password is Keith Moon in the Who Are You video.
And that goes vice versa, too, because there's something I could bring up, and you would be like, oh, it goes right
there.
Yeah,
unbelievable. So anyway, but yeah, so I'm just looking at you there, Sugar Man, and you look like Keith Moon. So now I have to laugh every time I see it. Now, do you wear your headphones like that a lot, or is this just...
You know, here and there, yeah, you know.
And what does that do? Is it?
It's just, you know, my if I don't do it and have it, the headphones where they're supposed to be, my hair looks ridiculous.
Oh, so it's a vanity thing.
It is a vanity thing. Because obviously,
so I thought it was
some... I'm on the stream for the first time in so long that.
I thought it was some, you know, the decibel level is much better if you wear the headphones sideways.
Got the sound quality going.
Yeah, he's just. Another narcissistic millennial. How old are you, Dan?
35.
Oh, yeah. There you go. Right in the sweet spot. You don't want my hair to look bad. I got news for you, pal. It's 10 after 4. No one's looking. Do you honestly think that between you, me, and Mick, anyone's even listening?
It's not you I'm worried about. It's when I go upstairs and the dysfunctional families around.
Oh, yeah, so they can make fun of you? Because how long do you hang around here after this show?
I try to leave by 5:50, 6 o'clock.
So oh, you I try to get out there. Yeah, because yeah, I know, because Andrea Darlis has such a cadre of insults to sling at you, I'm sure. Her acid tongue.
Well, you know, Dave Bennett is so well-dressed at all times.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, so you got to... You got a nice head of hair, though, I got to say.
Thank you.
Yeah. Even though it looks very matted down because of your headphones. So anyway, we're talking to the Pop Culture Group here about some pop culture topics. August 21st, I'll see you on the dark side of the moon, Mick.
That's right. The total solar eclipse.
Yeah. It's nothing I could do. It's a total eclipse of the sun.
That's it.
Thank you, Bonnie Tyler. So... are you eclipse mania or what? I mean, I don't know. In fact, I was reading about this. You know, there's another one in 2024?
Yeah, so it's just a few years away.
Yeah, I mean,
you know, 7 years away.
I'm planning on being here, so I don't know. You know, I'll give you a Halley's Comet or a Halley's Comet. That's the way you say it now. But I don't know. I mean, are you eclipse crazy yet or no?
No, but there are people that are into that. In fact, so much so that I guess the big place in Illinois to see it is going to be down in Carbondale. And I was just talking to somebody a couple of days ago about the eclipse. They were bringing it up. And you can't get a hotel room within like an hour of Carbondale.
Well, apparently, it sounds like for some reason, I don't know why Oregon is the spot where everyone's going. I don't know if it's going to be best seen there. But apparently everybody is flocking to the Pacific Northwest and Oregon especially. And I read something that one of the major rental car companies, I'm not sure which one, of course, as they always do, they overbooked.
Sure.
And now everybody's planning on picking up their car.
Well, better call Uber.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, and then I was trying to, you know, understand. I'm sitting there going, okay, now isn't this, you know, one of these eclipses like they always have? Where, you know, you really can't even look at it, right?
No, you can't. You can do that shadow box thing, or I guess there's some kind of filtered lens you can put over glass or whatever and look through it that way. But you're not supposed to look directly up at it because it can be blinding and all these other things. So I'm sure people have their devices so they can observe this thing. And keep in mind, it only lasts 3 minutes.
I know. That's all some of us last.
Yeah, well,
my nickname is Eclipse, because me and the eclipse last about 3 minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what I was going to say, because the solar eclipse, it's a lot like my love life.
Yeah.
It happens once every few years.
Yeah.
You can go blind watching it, and in 3 minutes, yeah. It's all over.
Once every 7 years. You know, before we continue on this eclipse, we have a little holdover call from Ted here. Let me go to Ted real quick here. Ted, are you there? Is that where he's at? Oh, no, he's over here. Ted, are you there?
Yeah, hi.
How you doing?
Thanks for having me on.
Hey, so what did you want to say? You want to talk about the little spillover from our Cub discussion about Leon Durham.
Yeah, well, you talked about the Steve Bartman getting a ring, and I think you might have mentioned this. I don't know, you did mention about Leon Durham. I think perhaps maybe that Leon Durham probably should get, like, forgiveness and perhaps a... you know, a championship ring too, you know, just to put things finally in the past.
Well, I think, he certainly made an error, but my point about Leon Durham is that even though that happened, you know, Leon Durham didn't have to move. Leon Durham's life wasn't thrown into upheaval because of that error, But Steve Bartman's was, and I don't understand that. I mean, like Mick said, the Cubs, that was only a best out of three series. The Cubs won going away with the two games here at Wrigley Field, just had to win one in San Diego, and they blew it.
Yeah, but that's not entirely on his fault, though. I mean, they had the three to two lead in the sixth inning. Anything could have happened after that, though.
No, I understand that. I think Leon Durham, doesn't really get a ring from the standpoint of, he was a player and he made an error. I think Steve Bartman deserves one because he was a fan who did what every fan should do. Or would probably do, and then he didn't lose the game on the field. The Cubs did.
Yeah, they blamed him. That is true.
I mean, Alex Gonzalez, as we said, there was a tailor-made double play ball.
That's a double play, yeah.
Ends the inning, and then he flubs it, and then Mark Pryor gave up some runs, and then the thing just fell apart. It wasn't Steve Bartman's fault, and yet the guy took so much heat for that, and still does to some extent. So I don't know. I don't know. We can't keep giving out rings to everybody, but I think Steve Bartman's life was affected by this, not just his career, but his life. And so I think it was nice that the Cubs did that for him.
That's true. That's almost similar with Mitch Williams, where he got ridiculed for giving up the home run to Joe Carter with the Phillies.
Oh, right.
Yeah, 93 series.
I forgot about that. Yeah, that's
up his house.
Yeah, that's right.
His car or something.
Yeah, and we were talking too. Remember Bill Buckner? You couldn't even go to Boston.
Oh, Red Sox. Yeah.
Bill Buckner just recently, like a 2 or 3 years ago, once again after they finally won the World Series, he was finally welcomed back. But he was a dead man walking if he went to Boston.
Yeah, that's true though.
So. I mean, hey, look, I appreciate the passion that sports fans have. But, when it comes to, hating people or destroying their lives, we have to get this into a little perspective here.
And the other perspective is it's a game where millionaires are running around chasing a little white ball.
Yeah. I've been a Cub fan forever, but at the end of the day, it's just a game. But, no, good point there, Ted. I appreciate you waking up and I appreciate you calling in.
Not a problem. Thanks for taking my call.
Okay, take care.
Okay. All right, bye.
But, so we were talking about the eclipse. We'll talk a little bit after the a little break here. But, the other thing, too, we were talking about that eclipse. You were talking about that device. What I love about that crazy, cardboard device.
Put up to the so you can watch the eclipse and watch what the...
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of like a Peeping Tom kind of device that's made out of, cardboard boxes. But the best thing is, here we are in 2017. When you look through that device and look at the sun and you see the actual eclipse or whatever it is, as one covers the other, it's like a pinhole.
Oh, yeah, it's real tiny, yeah.
I mean, it's 2017. We can't create a better device to see it a little bigger than this pinhole?
Somebody couldn't market something that you could buy at 7-Eleven, like those fidget spinners,
Yeah. I mean, look at all the stuff. We've got a spray that turns into rubber glue, Flexit. And we can't create a device to see an eclipse?
We've got the George Foreman grill.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. We've got a red, yellow, and green blood pressure wrist cuff that lets you know if your blood pressure is too high or too low by the color, but we can't create an eclipse thing. We've got that lady, that little chubby lady with the red hair who cooks all those ridiculous meals with her copper, a pan?
Yeah.
We've got all this new copper. Everybody's got a copper pan now. 17 different copper pans, and we still can't create an eclipse machine that helps us see this eclipse because we can't look at it or burn our cones that is bigger than a pinhole.
Well, we've got between now and 7 years from now to maybe come up with a device.
So, in other words, you're going to drive to Oregon and then look at this thing in a pinhole for 3 minutes.
That's it, and then go back home.
And people wonder why I go to so many Elton John concerts. I got news for you.
Lasts a couple hours.
At least that's 2 hours. It's not 3 minutes looking through a pinhole.
It'd be like you go to an Elton John show and he sings your song and then says goodnight.
No, he stops after it's a little bit funny.
Yeah, okay, right, thanks, Elton. Gotta go.
Thank you. Good night. That's worth the plane trip. Hang on, Mick. We'll be right back. Jim Tirano filling in for Nick DiGilio here in the midst of a pop culture club segment with pop culture guru Mick Kaler. And I have been notified by both text and by a story that I was reading that apparently there are glasses available. NASA, leave it to NASA. They gave us Tang.
Sure.
They gave us Velcro.
The space sticks.
And they gave us moon rocks. And they, I guess, apparently are giving us sunglasses that you can look at the eclipse with and not burn out your retinas.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
See, I'm a little afraid because, as I've told you many times, one of my medical maladies of the last couple of years, I have a venal occlusion in my eye, which means one of my veins actually popped. I didn't even know it. And so I have to get an injection in my eyeball. I have to get one on Friday, in fact. And so I'm afraid to look at the eclipse because I'm afraid, you know, I'm afraid I might do some damage to my eye.
I was going to say, if I were you, pal, I would stay in the house, pull down all the shades, wait till the eclipse is over.
I'm literally saying to myself, I mean, I don't know if I'd be looking at it anyway, but I don't have the official glasses. Now, I don't know if they're like those. Remember those blue blocker glasses from the 90s?
I still have some, mister.
I bet you do. I saw a new version of those. They don't call them blue blockers, but they look very similar. And I wonder if they're just a new version of blue blockers for a new generation who wasn't around before.
Okay.
And seeing how you could see clearer and it gets rid of all the glare and everything. But apparently NASA does have some glasses. I understand that maybe you can get those at the Adler Planetarium if you go there.
Okay.
So if that's what you're into, then, you know, by all means. So at least we have made some technological advances in looking at our eclipse as opposed to looking through that ridiculous cardboard peeping Tom device.
So no more pinhole.
Yeah, some bad pinhole thing. Waiting 20 years to look through a pinhole. So anyway, Mick, why don't you stick around after the news and we'll continue to chat until we bring the train into the station at 5. Is that okay?
You bet.
All right, cool. Jim Tirano, Elton Jim, filling in for Nick DiGilio this morning.
We're in the home stretch.
Yes, we are. Here they come spinning out of the turn. Elton Jim followed by Mick Kaler and Dan Sugarman Sugaroo. Yeah, I've enjoyed my 2 days here, and hopefully we can do it again soon when Nick takes a vacation or so. As I said, if you're enjoying the show, then please enjoy it on Sunday morning, filling in for Dean Richards from 9 a.m. till 12 on Sunday, and then I'll be back here on Monday night from 9 to 11.
They're working you like a sled dog.
Oh, yeah. Boy, 4 days. What am I going to do with 4 days? Wow, can I make it through?
Steer that boat into the rocks.
Okay? Yeah. Let's go to the phones here. Trucker Jeff, how you doing, sir?
Hello, how are you?
Very good. What's going on?
I am one of the few fans of the Sergeant Pepper movie.
Really?
Oh, yes.
You and me, we're the only two.
You said it was horrible earlier.
Well, I mean, it is pretty bad, but there's almost like, it's one of those things like Plan 9 from Outer Space, like an Ed Wood movie. It's actually so bad, it's kind of good.
Shoot, every song on there is a lot better than all the Beatles versions of it.
Well, I don't know about that, Trucker. I mean, come on. I mean, I would say that there are some versions. I mean, as our guest earlier in the show said, Robert Rodriguez, I mean, George Burns doing his talk singing to Fixing a Hole. It's not exactly, you know, I don't think that matches Paul's performance on Sergeant Pepper.
Okay, what about Sandy Moreno's version of Here Comes the Sun? A lot better than the Beatles version.
Really? Wow, that's quite, my gosh, that's quite a statement when Here Comes the Sun has actually been voted in many cases one of the best and favorite Beatles songs of all time. Now, I have to say, I think that Robin Gibb of the Bee Gees does a very good version of Oh Darling.
Of course.
And
what are you being an Elton John fan? versions of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Well, that wasn't in the movie, but I have to say.
It was.
No, it wasn't.
Stargard did it.
No, it wasn't.
Stargard did it.
What's that?
Stargard.
Oh, but no, but Elton's version is not in the movie.
Yeah, Elton's version is number one. That's the best one. It's Stargard and then the Beatles.
Yeah, that was, in fact, I have to say, Mick, where do you fall in? I really think that Elton's version of Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is a great cover version.
I think it is, too, because it's longer and it's more, I to be honest, and God bless the memory of George Martin, I think it's better produced.
It really is. If you listen to there's a lot of, I mean, Gus Dudgeon was a great, and he passed away several years ago in a tragic car accident. But if you listen to the production on most of Elton's songs, but yeah, I agree with you. The Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds version, there is so much going on. There's so much, there's Ray Cooper's percussion. You know, John Lennon plays guitar on that.
Right.
And as well as Elton's piano and, Nigel Olsen's drums. It really is a really good version.
Well, and the other thing, too, is to be honest, when you listen to the Beatles version compared to Elton's, the Beatles version, it almost sounds like just a little ditty, like a let's just rush this out there and move on to the next song.
Yeah.
It just has a different feel to it, and I've always loved Elton's version.
So, Trucker, do you actually enjoy watching the Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Band film, which starred Peter Frampton as Billy Shears? And
Yes, I do. I have the DVD of it.
Wow.
I have the soundtrack of it.
I have the soundtrack both on CD, and I still have my vinyl.
I've had four different versions of the vinyl, and I've lost them over the years moving in that, and now I have it on a recorded cassette.
Wow. Wow, you are really a fan of that. Well, as I said, I would have to question the total, movie in terms of being a great movie, but I don't think that every song or every performance is great, but I have to say that, as I said before, Aerosmith's version of Come Together is great. Frampton's version of Getting Better is very good, too.
Yeah. What is it? What about Paul Nichols' version of Good Morning?
Yeah, good morning. And
there.
Yeah, that. Well, you know what now? You know, Trucker, I'm going to have to change my view on it. I'm going to have to go back and listen to my. I'm going to have to pull out my vinyl from 1978 of Sgt. Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band movie soundtrack and give it another shot. You may have converted me.
What about Alice Cooper's version of Because?
Yeah, that's a little. Yeah, that one, I don't know. That's a little weird, too, but. Because the world is round, it gets me high. All right, truckers, stay safe on the roads there, my friend.
Hey, you do.
Okay. Wow, Trucker really digging the Sgt. Pepper soundtrack.
Totally, yeah.
Do you remember that movie?
Oh, yeah. I remember what a big deal it was. I remember being at the record store when the soundtrack came out. And everyone's, like, looking it over and looking to see who sings what on it and all those things, yeah.
Like I said during my conversation with Robert Rodriguez, that movie and that album really opened me up to a lot of the deeper tracks of the Beatles that I had never heard before because I had always, by the time, I was of an age to really start to, be aware of music, the Beatles had already broken up.
Yeah, so it was, different situation, yeah.
Yeah, I even had the Sgt. Pepper, I still have the... I have the album, I have it on CD, I have the book, the picture book, and I even have a pin. So now I'm thinking about it, I really was into that.
A little bit.
Yeah, how scary am I? But I'm trying to think who else was in that. And then, of course, Steve Martin did Maxwell's Silver Hammer.
That's right, exactly.
Joan was quizzical, studied metaphysical science in the home. Late night, all alone with the pictures. Joe, So, I was wondering what you were thinking about, talking about pop culture. How about David Letterman returning to television?
Yeah, I saw that. And I had a feeling he would come back at some point to do something, not like he had done before as far as, you know, a talk show thing, you know, in the goofy way that, you know, he did his show for so many years. But I just thought, you know, he's got something else in his, up his sleeve, and I think he has other interests. And it made me also think of, you know, when Johnny Carson retired, remember he said he would come back when he found something that he wanted to do.
Right.
You know, that he found worthy of television. And Johnny had a lot of different interests, and he went to Africa, and he went to his, you know, tennis matches in Wimbledon that he liked and all that. But he never found anything and said, I want to go out and do this now. I'm done. But I'm not surprised with Letterman. I thought that he would be inquisitive enough to find something, because he's had side hobbies like the racing that he does with Bobby Rahal and the Indy cars. I'm not surprised at all.
No, and in fact, if you haven't heard the news, Letterman has agreed to do a 6-episode talk show for Netflix. And apparently it will be very much kind of, probably sounds like, in the vein of a Charlie Rose show, where it will just be a one-on-one interview, very in-depth. There may be some outside of the studio production elements as well, but it sounds like it might be very similar to a Charlie Rose. And I think, you know, Letterman, for all his kookiness and craziness, as the years went on, became a very good interviewer. And I think he's a smart guy, and I think he's looking for, like you're saying, an ability to sort of show that side.
Well, yeah, and especially, as you mentioned, those last few years of the Letterman show, I used to, when I'd watch the show, you could tell he was really enjoying himself when he'd get into some of these, you know, quote, in-depth interviews at the desk with, say, a Dan Rather or even a Donald Trump, just somebody where he could really engage and not just look for the quick little joke and a quick little plug of a movie. He really had more of an in-depth interest in doing that. You could tell that just by watching him, and that's why I'm not surprised he's doing this kind of a show.
And, you know, I think that I've always felt, even though it was denied, I always felt that Letterman was pushed out.
I think so, too.
I don't think he retired on his own. I think that CBS was looking at Fallon and Kimmel, and they wanted someone younger. Ironically, they didn't get someone younger because Colbert is in his mid-50s, but he certainly isn't 68.
Right.
So, I mean, he was younger comparatively, but he certainly wasn't in his 40s like the other two. And then, you know, Robert Corden. But I think that he was kind of moved out. I think he was also getting a little tired on his own, but I don't think he would have left unless they kind of nudged him out. And so clearly, the fact that it's been only 2 or 3 years, he's back already.
Yeah.
I think that kind of proves that point as well. And boy, I have to say, this Netflix, where the heck did this company come from?
I know. It's got everything going. It's got movies, it's got specials, it's got series, everything.
They are spending money out the yin-yang. Letterman's going to have to come with a huge price tag. I think they just signed Chris Rock and Amy Schumer. I think they just stole Seinfeld. He had that, you know, that in the car. What is that? Coffee.
Comedians getting in cars, getting coffee on Crackle, right?
Yeah. Now they lured him over with a couple of specials. I think they gave him $100 million. I mean, clearly, they are making a stride to become almost another network.
Well, I was going to say Netflix is basically becoming the Amazon of viewing.
And the irony is, I don't have a Netflix account.
Neither do I.
I don't.
I got to work on that.
Yeah, you know why, though? It's not because I'm anti-technology, which I've been accused of being somewhat of a dinosaur. But the thing is, my television is from 2007 or 2006, so I don't have it built in.
Okay.
I don't have a smart set, per se. So if I were to get Netflix, I'd have to get the subscription on my computer and then get some kind of gizmo to connect my TV to my computer every time I wanted to watch it. And so that's a pain in the butt.
Yeah, I'm in the same kind of situation, but eventually I think I am.
I mean you have to.
Netflix. I think it's eventually going to happen.
Yeah, you have to. I mean, because it's almost ridiculous at this point not to have it. Let me go to the phone real quickly because we got another. The Beatles seem to have been, getting some people excited this morning here. We got Jeff on the phone. How you doing there, Jeffrey?
Fine. How are you?
Good. What did you want to talk about?
Well, you were talking about people doing Beatles songs.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if you ever heard. And I don't know if this is unbelievable, and I heard it. Frank Sinatra doing something.
Yes, I have heard that.
I can bear it. I don't know if you sat through the whole thing.
Can you? Yeah, you know, it's fantastic. Oh, I've heard it for years. In fact, the first time I heard it was there's a great album. It's called The Main Event. It's Frank Sinatra's return after he retired. And he's at Madison Square Garden performing in a boxing ring with his tuxedo. And so he starts singing something in the way that she moves. And he goes, but the best part is he goes, and you sit, stick around and you may see Jack.
Yeah, I know that.
He throws in a Jack.
I know.
I mean, he has, there's, you know, I feel sorry for him because he's clearly trying to at least embrace the Beatles. He was very anti-Elvis for a while, very anti-rock and roll. But clearly he said, okay, let me check out these Beatle guys. Give me a song, Don Costa, that I could sing.
Well, so, the other part of it, too, is, he always credited that song as Lennon McCartney.
Yeah, which, of course, it was. Yeah, I mean, he had no clue.
Yeah, and it was. It was George Harrison who wrote it. George was probably like, hey, I'm the one who wrote that one, buddy. Yeah.
You stick around, you're going to see Jack. Do we have that? Danny?
Don't want to leave her now.
You know I believe and how. Do, do, do. Listen to this. He goes, doo doo be doo doo doo. Here it comes, I think, now. You're asking me, does my love grow? Well, I don't know.
I don't know.
You stick around, it's gonna show, Jack.
Stick around, Jack. It might show.
But I don't know.
I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
Whoa, whoa. Something in the way that she moves. Oh, Frank. Oh, thank you so much, Jeff. Call of the day.
I can't take any more.
Call of the day, Jack.
Sinatra putting his own label on it.
You stick around. It's gonna show, Jack.
All right, Jack, have a good morning.
But I don't know. I do not know.
You know, the only thing missing in that, there could have been a, she really swings, baby.
Yeah. Oh, great, great stuff.
But you hang around, Jack. It might show.
But I don't know.
I don't know.
I do not know. Oh, Mick, you gotta love this.
I forgot.
I love this. Ooh, this, you can see Frank now. He's got his eyes closed with his hands cupped.
And all I gotta do
is think about her.
Something in those things
that she shows me. I do not want to leave her now.
Don't
ooh, yeah. Who? You know I believe and how. Doobie doo.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Jeff was calling the show right there.
Brings up a good one.
Right, pulling that nugget out. So anyway, it is about 2 or 3 minutes to 5 here. I'm Elton Jim filling in for Nick DiGilio for the past 2 nights. I've really enjoyed myself. Thanks to Dan Sugarman Shagru, who has helped steer this ship very smoothly and in a very fun way for the last couple of days. I appreciate all your work and your support and your enthusiasm. It's been really fun. And you look like Keith Moon with your headphones across your head like that. Thanks to you, Mick, for sticking around for the last couple of days, too, helping me out. And I really appreciate it. It's always fun doing radio with you. So thank you so much, and we'll talk to you soon.
My pleasure, pal. You take it easy.
All right. And once again, thanks to you folks for listening the last couple of days. I appreciate your phone calls and your texts. And even though I can't see you guys, I can feel you out there. And I really had a ball. Because I said, I enjoy this shift because it might not be the biggest in terms of listeners, but it certainly is the best in terms of loyal and compelled listeners who are listening for a reason. So I always appreciate that. As I said, I'd be up anyway. If I wasn't doing this, I've been watching. There's a mini marathon of Match Game on the Buzzer Channel every night from 1 to 3 in the morning, and I'm usually up anyway. So I'd rather be at here at WGN doing radio than just watching Match Game, because where else would I be able to spray my cashmere woods and make this studio smell oh so fresh with a hint of citrus, amber, and vanilla? And on that note, I don't know how much I don't know what I can say, except we have talked about a whole bunch and done a lot of things. I want to thank also my guest tonight, Robert Rodriguez. We talked some really fun Beatles stuff. And don't forget, the Fest for Beatle fans this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday at the Hyatt Regency O'Hare on River Road in Rosemont. And you can go to www.fest.com and find out more information on that. If you like what you heard the last couple of days, I will be on Sunday filling in for Dean Richards from 9 in the morning until noon. And I'll be back here Monday night, the next day, from 9 to 11, filling in for Justin Kaufman. So you can certainly get your fill of Elton Jim if you want it right here at WGN